It's Wednesday, December 6th, and this is our regular Board of Commissioners meeting. I'll call the meeting to order, and we have a quorum, but Doug is a couple minutes late here, so he'll show up. I'm going to skip over the recognitions and proclamations till he gets here, because he has to sign the form and hasn't signed it yet. But so I'll move down to consent calendar. Consent calendar, routine items or things we've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to make a comment on?
No, it all looks, it's a very long consent calendar, but all looks routine, Mr. Chair, so I'd be happy to make a motion for approval of today's consent calendar.
Okay, I'll second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Now, we move down to, do you want to do the marijuana tax credit, or should
I? I would prefer to do that when we have all three of you here.
I agree, since that's such an important issue. In that case, if you don't mind, we'll just hesitate here for a couple minutes.
He said he'd be here in a couple minutes.
Okay. He said he'd be a couple minutes, and we could hand out the pins and get them lined up.
That's true.
So, we'll go ahead and do this. So today's employee's recognition is Beverly Phillipson with 5 years. If you'll come forward, we'll hand you the pin. Nancy Hale, 15 years. Dennis Buckmaster,
come on up.
20 years.
Gary Davey,
20 years. And Carrie DeLisser.
There he is. First thing you have to do is sign these.
All right. Well, we made it through traffic and made it through a family crisis. So.
There's always that.
So, you must have got caught on the wrong side of the construction, huh?
Well, that was part of the end of the day.
Over here.
Sure.
No.
Yeah, you're going to have to get your pictures taken.
Yeah. We got.
There we go.
Yeah. Right. To get out of the way.
You get to sneak out of the way.
I get out of the way. You don't want me in there.
Here you go.
Hold on, we need a picture.
And no one else is here, so are you ready for pictures?
Yeah, can you guys kind of scrunch
right here?
Yeah, and Dennis, can you go on the left, right side of Terry? And we'll take pictures of you guys together. Thanks, Bill.
Yep.
Okay.
Is this good enough?
Yep. All right, everyone. 3, 2, 1. Looks good. Thank you.
One more.
Make them smile.
Good. Just look at them. Thank you.
Okay. See you later. Thank you.
Congratulations. You know, I think we're missing some of these employees. I think we ought to offer them $5 and see how many show up. Okay. Please, I get back over to the staff. Lose any. We have these down.
And my apologies for being a family issue and then the traffic backed up more than normal.
I left you as
Murphy's Law
by the sheriff's. Did you get into that one spot here? It's the only spot then.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now we move down to discussion on marijuana tax report presented by Wayne Belmont.
Commissioners, we have received our first distribution of state and local marijuana tax receipts, and so I thought I'd prepare a report for you that talks about the dollars received to date, what we might be seeing in the future, and then some of the questions that we've been hearing about what are those funds going to be used for, what kind of decisions do you need to or want to make related to those particular funds. So let me start off by saying that as I reviewed the information coming forward. This is one of the more complex, convoluted tax distribution schemes that I have seen. And I've tried to distill it down. I can give you an incredible amount of information about what this means. But let me just start off by saying our first distribution, the first distribution represents monies that have been collected since July, or prior to July 1, 2017. That's pot one. And pot two is between July 1, 2017 and September 30th, 2017. That's pot two. On very different formulas that the legislature adopted originally and then revised in the last legislative session. And that the amount that we've received, and I'll tell you the amount right now, it's $105,577.26. I can't tell you what we're going to get in the future because of the way this thing was done and the way it's presented to us. One of the things that I found fascinating about this is we get... Basically, we get electronic funds transfer from the state and a receipt that says you get $105,000. I can't tell you. I can't break it down. There's no information the state will provide us. They're claiming that they can't provide us this information. You know, as to breakdown of where this came from, how much of this is local, how much of it's state under the old formula, how much is state under the new formula, what we might see in the future. So I'm not going to be much help when it comes to planning for these particular proceeds, at least at this time, for next year. I know there's a an effort going to be made at the next legislative session to request authorization to provide more information for us so we can get a better idea of what's happening here. So that's number one. Number two is, this is the local distribution. This is the county's share of proceeds that come from state and then again local taxation of marijuana. It does not include other dedicated state monies. So, for instance, there's 20% of the net proceeds of the tax go to a state fund for the Oregon Mental Health, Alcoholism, and Drug Services account that's maintained by the Oregon Health Authority. That money actually will be distributed back to counties, and at some point our Health and Human Services Department will be part of that process of getting those particular funds for those dedicated purposes there. They'll have some sideboards on what the monies can be used for and how we can utilize those, but that's a whole different process. This is not money that we get as part of that, our share of that 20%. And I did, at this point, can't even tell you what the formula is for distribution, whether it's a competitive process between counties, whether you apply for a grant, whether it's just distributed with sideboards in a contract or what. But likely it'll be done with an IGA is what I understand for those monies. It's also separate from other funds that state law enforcement gets for a variety of purposes here. So this is our money. I can tell you that on a go-forward basis, the distribution formula only goes to counties that did not opt out of counties actually are prohibiting recreational marijuana within their boundaries and borders. They will not be recipients. They get some of the old money, the pre-July 1, 2017 that was distributed on a population basis. They won't get any of the new money if they opted out. It's based on a formula that recognizes the kinds of recreational marijuana operations you have. And there's various categories, production, those kinds of things, the number of licensees you have within a county, and the percentage of grow operations you have in your county as relates to the entire grow operations in the state. Very complex formula. And that's what will happen on a go-forward basis. And so until we actually get, I think, the next couple of distributions, we won't have a very good idea of how much money will be coming in the future. So that's, I do want to make sure, and for purposes of the media and Steve, make sure it's recognized that this is a tax on recreational marijuana only. There is no tax on medical marijuana, and that's not part of the process. So that's the money coming in. Now, what can we do with that money? There used to be sideboards on the money that came into the county under the old law. But they never did a distribution under the old law. They've only done a distribution under the new law. The new law removed those sideboards. So this money comes to you, it goes to the general fund, and you make a determination as a commission on what you want to do with that funding. I thought it would be interesting to give to you, and I provided in your packet, 11 Oregon counties authorized a local tax. And I did a survey of those 11 counties, and also five cities in Lincoln County did a local tax. And I did a survey to see whether or not there were any sideboards placed on the utilization of those funds by cities or counties when they did the local tax. And the materials I provided you a little chart there. I've actually want to update it orally here because I received additional information from Lane County this morning. But the way that actually works is that, and it's now 8 of the 10 counties that have responded placed no restrictions on those funds. So they come into your general fund the same way that the state money does. So it goes to the general fund to be used as determined in the budget process. I do know, and I did learn, that one of those counties, Coos County, is currently entertaining a proposal from a special law enforcement funding proposal, which they may actually at least take the initial monies they receive and dedicate those or budget those for a law enforcement process there. Two of the Oregon 10 counties actually have voter-approved restrictions on how the funds can be used. So in Clackamas County, they said it has to be used for code enforcement, law enforcement, addiction treatment, and related public health and safety needs. That's the limitations on their for their funding. In Josephine County, they said it can be used for public health, education and treatment related to marijuana and marijuana products, and public safety. The five Lincoln County cities which approved have voter-approved taxes are Walport, Yahats, Depot Bay, Lincoln City, and Newport. They all place no restrictions on the use of those funds. They go into their general funds, and they make determinations how to use those funds in their budget process. And I've also attached some materials from the Oregon Department of Revenue on how the tax will be collected in the future, and that includes identification of some of those particular state funding activities that will be actually funded through this particular division of the proceeds. So that's the base information that I was able to find, and I thought it was might be useful to you as you kind of make some decisions going forward. I do want to close by saying that we actually did not budget because we had no clue how much money was coming in. So we placed no anticipated revenue in this year's budget. This is unanticipated revenue, so it's not at this point allocated for any purpose.
Do you have a clue when the next payment will be?
They said quarterly. We got it through September 30th, so it could be through the end of the calendar year. So I would assume that we're talking about sometime. The quarter ends
December 31st.
And how long after the end of the quarter?
Given the fact that they've been collecting it for 18 months or 20 months, and we got our first distribution, I wish I could give you a good indication. The formulas are set. I mean, that's by law. That's a pretty straightforward process now, even though it is complex. I would assume, I don't know, they have given us no indication of when we'll see the next quarterly payment.
So is it appropriate time then to have a discussion about distribution at this time?
I wanted to bring this to your attention so that you know that we've got this money in here, and then you can consider it. You've got a lot of options here. Some jurisdictions have placed it in their general fund. It's just another revenue source that meets general city or county needs for whatever they're going to, the priorities are for that city or county. Some are waiting and are going to utilize this funding and with whatever they can project and plan to utilize it starting July 1 of 2018 in the coming next fiscal year. They'll accumulate what they've got and what they can project and then utilize it that way. And then some, I think, are in the process like we are, and that is they're having some discussions as to what, if anything, they want to do specifically with the funding.
So, would you gentlemen like to discuss this?
Yes, and Mr. Chair.
I've got some feelings, too, so yep. Go ahead.
Okay, just a couple of initial thoughts. I wanted to make you all aware I've had some contacts about this already from the Samaritan Foundation asking, if we were going to dedicate it to any particular funding project and how we were going to make that decision. Also want to remind you, I think we were contacted last year by both PADA, Partnership Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse, and our local Alcohol and Drug Abuse Planning Committee, both urging us to use it for prevention and education treatment. Just some initial thoughts after having a very quick chance to digest Mr. Belmont's report. I think I would propose that we tell these folks and anybody else who contacts us about it that we will make the decision about how this money gets spent as part of our regular budget process next spring. I mean, that provides multiple opportunities for public input. The budget committee meets throughout the county, and if anybody wants to bring forward specific proposals, they can. But in the meantime, you know, my initial thought is let's keep our flexibility. I mean, I think there's a strong nexus between using this money for public health and or public safety type uses, but at least for now I'd prefer, especially not knowing, not having any idea what our long-term distribution is going to be, not make any commitments too soon.
Well, I'd like to respectfully disagree with you.
Okay.
Because at this point we should be talking about the policy choice here.
Mm-hmm.
And we can lay out the sideboards to the policy choice. We'll yet when the money does come, at least you'll know kind of where it's distributed, and so you can then move quicker in the budget process at the time.
Okay.
If we laid out the sideboards, let's say if we decided to split the funds and said part of it goes to law enforcement or part of it goes to education and treatment, that percentage then, and then part of it goes to general fund, which law enforcement gets part of that money too, some kind of a split.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it comes time to get to the budget process, at least you've got the sideboards in place instead of trying to do it at the same time.
I see your point. Can I ask Mr. Belmont a related question to your point?
Sure.
The two counties where the voters did impose restrictions, basically Clackamas and Josephine, where it's both public health and public safety uses, do you know if those measures include any kind of percentage breakdown?
No, they don't.
In fact, so it just gives.
So they're pretty broad and flexible sideboards. They can actually allocate all or a portion of it to any of those uses within the that were authorized by the voters.
And that worries me because broad and flexible, I've seen change a lot in government. I'd rather nail down things so it's clear so people understand it.
So could I ask a few a follow-up question, Mr. Carey?
Let me go let Doug in here first, because I can see he's sitting there simmering.
Yeah. I'm not simmering. I have a few thoughts. First of all, I think it's important to note that we don't know what the future revenue stream is going to be. While $105,000 is not insignificant, I may eat my words, and I hope I do, but I would be very surprised if the future amounts are on an annual basis close to that amount. Second of all, we're facing a $460,000 budget deficit right now with the loss of revenues from the renting of the corrections beds to Benton County. So as we start looking forward, again, we've got a $460,000 hole that we've got to fill. And I guess my final thought is we can change. We can change. So my thoughts are, A, until we know what really is going to be a consistent amount of, as best as possible, have an idea of what the expected annual revenues are, I'm not sure how to put whatever amount of money that is to the best use. And again, I'm concerned about the deficit that we're facing. And until we find a solution to that, every little bit helps.
Mr. Chair, I was just curious on your thinking. So were you thinking like something like what we've did with the animal levy, where we actually have adopted a policy that 65% goes to pay for shelter operations, 35% for the animal control officers?
We can build it however you want. I'm not saying a percentage, but
okay.
I like things that, so that whether I'm sitting here or somebody in the future, they decide to siphon the money off to something, This did come from marijuana. There are consequences from it. I'd like to return part of it, not all of it, but part of it, back for prevention, treatment, or law enforcement, whatever you guys decide. But I think, to me, I guess I'm in government, I like to tell people clearly what's there. Now, the numbers may change, but then there's no, it is what it is. If they turn around and give us $1 million, then should we be able to just take and peel it off and spend it to something that's at that point in time? I agree with your deficit, but this money isn't going to fill the deficit either. It's just
future commissioners may change the policy that we create today. So I respect that. And again, the deficit we have is from loss of revenues and public safety. So. By using, and I'm not saying we use it all, but I'm saying I think we need to acknowledge the fact that we do have a $460,000 deficit or loss of revenue, and it's public safety related, and certainly use of these funds toward that challenge is, in effect, using those revenues for public safety.
Of course, we could make the argument, since most of the people behind bars are there because of either mental illness, an addiction problem, or their dual diagnosis, that by doing more on prevention and treatment, we're also helping public safety.
Understood.
But of course, the payoff isn't as immediate. So let me throw out.
We'd still have a deficit.
Yeah, either way, that's right. So with a policy statement, something like what Josephine County adopted, proceeds used for public health, education and treatment related to marijuana and marijuana products, and public safety, with the understanding that it can go, you said, Mr. Belmont, they have the flexibility within that to say it can go in any proportion, any amount to any of those areas if they decide that.
Well, then I'd ask you the question is, yeah, could that mean that if there is a loss of $400,000 in public safety, that you could allocate that all to make that up, and that meets that policy?
That's my question, I guess. That maybe if we decide we need to do that next year to help meet that deficit, but perhaps if another funding source comes about for public safety, that then the next year we could shift some or all of it back into prevention and treatment.
I like things that are nailed down tight.
You'd like it nailed down tight.
That flexibility, I mean, if somebody decides to change it in the future, but what I've seen most of the times, we've respected the previous commissioner's decisions, and we've tried to maintain a lot of their philosophies with a lot of grant programs and things like that. The other thing that worries me is we really haven't heard from the public on this.
I think this is the first initial conversation.
Right. Yeah. We've got some people in the audience who might be interested today. I don't know.
Well, I think at this
point, schedule a later meeting.
I think you need to go out and do a public
staff
hearing notice and let them come in and let them all have equal time. Not that I don't want to hear from these people, but I want to make sure that all people that are involved have the same amount of opportunity.
I'm all for that.
So,
I guess I certainly support that. That's fine. But the other comment I'd make is, you know, I get a little concerned when, whether it's federal government, state government, or local government, starts taking money and saying, we're going to put sideboards on this so this money can only be spent for these purposes, because the financial situations can change, just as our county's financial situation changed last year when, on very short notice, we were notified that we were losing $460,000 in revenue. So to put sideboards on money further limits the ability of us as commissioners, to really fulfill our duty to try to manage the county finances so it's in the best interest of the future of the county.
And I understand what you mean, but the problems that exist still exist. Yeah. If we want to shift, it doesn't mean that the problem goes away, and the people that are dealing with that problem should know they're in the mix and can't just be eliminated overnight.
And what I said doesn't negate that. All it says is that when you create those sideboards, it creates restrictions that then have to be addressed. We can go ahead and make the same policy decision or the same financial decisions regardless of what the sideboards are.
And just a further observation on the Benton County contract and the loss of that funding, you know, if people were thinking we weren't planning ahead or hadn't foreseen that, actually we did know that Benton County for several years had been making attempts, all which turned out to be unsuccessful, to pass a levy to build a new jail. And so we always knew that this day would come someday, sooner or later, but we really thought we were going to have at least a year's lead time. They'd pass a levy, they'd issue bonds, again, a construction timetable, but what really wasn't anticipated was them coming up with a contract to use beds at the Norcor jail and then canceling with maybe a month's notice?
It was about a month.
Yeah, yeah. Which was what was required under that contract.
So, let me say this. I'm not saying I don't support using this money for treatment
right,
and addiction and public safety. I'm saying I have some concerns about necessarily restricting the use of these funds so that in the future, if we have challenges, we then have to say, well, wait a minute, we've got a policy, we've got to change this policy, versus saying this is a different need, a higher priority, and therefore that's how we decide to use the money. But I'm not against. I support some of these funds, potentially all of them. I'm just saying I think there is a way that I'd be more comfortable in approaching the issue.
I can try to explain why my attitude in this particular case is that it needs to be nailed down up front, because I worked on governor's policies on addiction and treatment when I was in the legislature. I've watched the talk in this area in literally every area. We haven't discussed it too much here, but in every case, everybody says, oh yeah, we have to spend money on it. But when it comes time inside the budgetary process, it seems like law enforcement and these other things take a higher priority. And yet, in reality, in my mind, the best money is that we can keep people from doing it up front. But it never seems to make the budgetary priority. And that's, I'm speaking from my own personal experience and why I'm saying my attitude.
I don't disagree with making it a budgetary priority. I have some concerns about placing sideboards that limit that budgetary process.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I make a suggestion in light of our budget timeline, in light of the fact that we're heading into the holidays, that maybe we schedule that public hearing very early in January and then make a policy decision a couple of weeks after that?
I think it's an excellent suggestion.
Matt? And maybe just on a closing note, there were, in addition to the 11 Oregon counties that passed a local tax, there were 100 cities, and I've done just a little bit of quick research on this conversation is going on in every single one of these communities. It was funny to listen to you and the accounts I've read in the newspaper on some of the other
discussions.
Same discussions that all these jurisdictions are having, so you're right in the mix.
Okay.
We will schedule something, probably not the first, because I think the first Wednesday in January is like the third. So we'll probably a little bit later
probably
in the month. Either the second or third.
Yeah. Okay, I'm good with that.
The third would be a Wednesday.
Don't quote me on that, because I don't have a calendar.
New Year's Day is Monday, so that would be the first. So the second, third is a Wednesday, 10th or the 17th.
Why don't we shoot for the 17th? That can't mid-month.
Does that give us enough?
Yeah, because
it's
enough time to get the word out.
Because we're going to push the budget process out a little bit.
That's fine.
That works.
Okay, we'll move then to the middle of January and conduct this in a public hearing forum.
Okay,
perfect.
Okay, we move down to item B, intergovernmental agreement between Lincoln County Public Works and the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department for the construction of the Oregon Coast Trail in the Otter Cruz and Otter Crest Loop areas.
Good morning. I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. I believe it was the end of October. Steve Hodge, our county engineer, brought to you the intergovernmental agreement between Lincoln County Road Department and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department for this project, which is an extension of the Oregon Coast Trail. There was some language within the agreement that I guess the board wasn't comfortable with. Mostly it was responsibilities of maintenance after the fact of construction. And so, and it, it was, it should have been clarified before we brought it to you the first time. It was an oversight, I believe. But that language has been straightened out. It does read now that Oregon Parks and Recreation will be responsible for the maintenance on the boardwalks that they construct. And at the same time, it also says that Lincoln County Road Department will be responsible for the maintenance on the paved shoulders that they construct. So that has been clarified. Also, there was a lot of other language after the fact that our legal counsel was uncomfortable with, and they asked for some of that language to be changed. I'm not going to go into detail because I really don't understand the things.
We probably don't either.
You know, I can simplify
it. Leave it to the attorneys.
How about I'll simplify it? So it's not only the maintenance responsibility, but it's also the liability.
All right.
Improvements you make. So that's now...
Like that, if somebody was injured on
The boardwalk in there, that they would they understand that they're not only responsible for the maintenance, but also if there's any claims that are made, we'll tender them to them.
So,
and same thing for us.
If I understand right, they gave us everything we wanted?
They actually...
That's what I understood.
So you're both comfortable with this?
Can you explain to me, are they afraid of Wayne Belmont now?
No, let's get this correct. This, I didn't work on that. I worked on the ideas behind it, but Jerry Herbage, the assistant county counsel, worked the specific language with ODOT. So
good job, Jerry.
Jerry and Steve were kind of the leads. Roy and I are just the...
You're the front men
on this one. So.
Well, I believe that they were more than willing to work with us because this is actually a high priority for Oregon Parks.
Yeah, right.
It came clear down from the governor that the Oregon Coast Trail will either be finished or at least will continue in its construction phases. And this is a phase. And the Oregon Parks has agreed to basically reimburse Lincoln County Road Department up to $280,000 for our share of the work, which will more than cover that. And as far as the road department goes, paved shoulders only makes sense. It makes the road itself safer. It makes the pedestrians and bicyclists that are using the road safer. It actually makes routine maintenance easier. It's all around a win-win situation, and so I would appreciate for the board to approve this as it is now written so that we can pass it on back to state parks and they can approve their end of it, and we can look forward to beginning construction in 2018.
Can we make this a consent item next week if everybody's comfortable?
I'm fine. Yeah.
Great.
No,
good
work,
gentlemen.
All right, thank you.
That's good news.
Yeah.
Okay, we move down to reports.
I don't have anything.
Well, you and I are both in Portland.
We have a hearing on the opposite side of the room.
How was it?
What'd you hear on your side?
Wait a minute.
That's a big room.
It was a big room.
It was a big room, yeah.
Yeah.
I was on the sunny side of the room? No, I won't say that. It was a good meeting. It's the annual summit meeting, if you will, of leaders from throughout the state in all aspects, I think, of the state, public, private, local government. And the governor spoke. I found the focus on the future to be intriguing, if not at times a little overwhelming. I heard the statement that I first heard about 5 years ago that the kids in elementary school right now will be working in jobs that don't exist, and that I think is a good way to illustrate the rapidly changing dynamics of technology, artificial intelligence, and the impact that those aspects will have on jobs in the future. And was encouraging to note that when it comes to being creative, there's not a computer yet that can be creative, can be innovative. On the other hand, when it comes to computers that can drive cars and you take a concept and create the concept after it's been, well, to finalize the concept after it's been created. Our artificial intelligence can do a lot of that. So very interesting. I had an opportunity in the evening to host a table of representatives from the business community and the public sector where we talked about different issues. Housing, no surprise, was a big area of conversation. And Commissioner Thompson, you'll be pleased to note that we had a healthy dialogue about the cap and trade issue that may be decided in the short session. So it was a good opportunity to interact with both public and private representatives about some of the issues that we face, not only at the state level, but at the local level.
Well, I took Bill's place, I guess.
Right.
We were busy, and I wasn't really planning on going. I hadn't normally attended that, but I'm glad I did.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I'd set up meetings to talk about carbon tax credits with the powers that are pushing it, because I knew them personally from previous experience. And so at lunch, we sat over at the side and had a good conversation about it. I'm worried. I don't think the rural part of the state is engaged. I don't think the industries are engaged in what this is going to be. And if it goes through in the special session, you've got to get your oar in the water. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of these things. You can say, no, we don't want to go. And if you take a hard line, then you're not involved to be able to craft anything when it does go. So I want to try to talk to a few key players in the fishing industry about engines, technologies of fuel, what works, what doesn't work, to understand better what's in California. I just had a quick conversation with Roy. One of the areas is going to be transportation. If money goes to the transportation fund, then it has to be distributed back out. And how do you get money out of that works for us in the rural part? In urban, they're having talks about sidewalks and, you know, mass transit and all these things. But out here, how do we go about reducing fuel? Well, one of the areas is better transportation. How do we make traffic flow better so that we don't burn fuel sitting idling and things like that, traffic jams in the summer and these kinds of questions? There's a whole bunch of things that could be put in there for us, but it takes public involvement, and I think Lincoln County, like always, will probably be one of the leaders at trying to have to produce the conversation in a fairly rapid time. If you think about it, that session is going to start here, and so the bill will roll out fairly fast, and if you're not in the bill, then you're on the outside pushing in, and it's real difficult.
So, Mr. Chair, could I say something related to that point? A woman who lives in Coos Bay and is volunteering with the campaign came and met with me on Monday, and she said she wanted to meet with, try to schedule meetings individually with both of you as well. And this was one of the concerns that I raised, and she said there are a couple of work groups providing input on the bill that Coos County Commissioner Melissa Cribbins is part of one of those groups. She said there is fishing industry representation as well, and other natural resource industry representation. So I said, be prepared. Commissioner Thompson, I think, will want to, and she said she has attended some of those meetings and listened to others. I said, be prepared. Commissioner Thompson will have lots of questions for you, I'm sure, about exactly who was at the table, how much input they had. You know, there's still no language for the bill. That I guess there's a partial draft, but they said legislative council has agreed to keep it open because they do want to incorporate input from these groups. But yeah, and she said she was very sympathetic to the concern that rural Oregon does usually seem to get the short end of the deal on this, and she wouldn't be on board unless she felt that our voice was in the process strongly.
Well, I was hoping it wouldn't come in this short session because it takes time to educate people.
Yeah.
I believe Brad Warren, who's really knowledgeable, he's a Pacific fisherman, and he's in Seattle. You know, I'm worried that the Oregon fishing industry, if it's going to be done in Oregon, we need to talk about what we're going to do here. And in California, they changed fuel systems, they replaced engines, they created grants for engines. to bring more fuel efficient engines. There's all this stuff. Now, whether or not it's even doable with the kind of money that they're going to raise, but that conversation needs to be had with Oregon, not Washington or California, because ours is different. Then I'm also real worried about the timber industry, because if they're not engaged in this, Lincoln County isn't the biggest timber producer in the state, but a lot of counties live on their timber and their harvesters, and if they get limitations through that, it could hurt the whole economy, which ultimately hurts us. So we need to be careful of what goes on. I had a very interesting meeting at ONC Lands, and the lunchtime presenter was the I forget his name, he's the head guy at Roseburg Timber Company, and talking about international trade and where timber's going, and it's was really enlightening, because they're a big lightning rod in the timber industry in Oregon, and there was very little discussion about this, so I'm not sure how much they're engaged. The other thing that happened over there, back to your AI, the conversation that I just blew me away was when they made an announcement. They said that by 2021, they were going to have $1.2 billion worth of unmanned vehicles on the road.
Wow.
Is that, did I get the number right? I think it was something like that.
The number was big. I don't remember the exact number.
That's only, think about it. That's only 3 years away, and they think they're going to have that much vehicles on the road. So you can imagine. I if they are, they're going to have to build a lot more roads in Portland, because I think they're going to have some problems running unmanned vehicles on some of our rural roads. But you never know. They also made a prediction that upset me, was when they said Lincoln or the coast was going to be one of the biggest losers
of jobs
in AI. And I'm going like, wait a minute. My experience in the natural resource industry, I can see a person making a projection like that if we had flat timberland like in the Southwest where they can run automated equipment through it. But you get into these hills and valleys and cuts and landslides out here, I'll be impressed if they've got a piece of harvesting equipment that can work in the timber here without people. I got to see that one yet. And I know that on the fish boat, we may have AI be able to turn around and make it so it's less labor intensive. But in the ocean, there's so many variables. I still think there has to be a person behind any piece of equipment. And we're down to 3 men on a lot of boats, 4 men on a lot of boats. I can't imagine losing very many jobs in those industries. And I don't see the tourist industry losing that, because the public contact and how you do that, you can go to a kiosk and plug in something, but I just can't imagine you going to the hotels on the coast and not wanting the public contact. But maybe I'm wrong.
Although, remember, let's see, I think it was at one of the hearings last year that, or public input meetings, you and I did, Mr. Belmont, about our room tax measure, and we were hearing about some of the small cottages like in the South County area that have been converted to remote management, and that people book online, they go, and there's a combination box where they get their room key out of, and there's no on-site management, which just, really blew me away, because I think most people, if they run out of towels or they have a noisy neighbor, they want somebody on-site who's going to be able to deal with those kind of things.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with their what's going to happen to the coast, but time will tell.
Yes, indeed.
Somebody in Portland that doesn't understand down here may have knowledge that we don't, or may have simplified the services that we provide.
Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell on this one. So then I'm going to talk about the thing I had the most fun.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of the process, before I had the meeting, I started to go to have lunch. They had a box lunch, and you went over and sat in the corner, and I started to go over, and there was a couple kids sitting there. I thought, well, I'll move away. And the kids turned around to me and says, what, you don't want to talk to us? I said, no, I'd love to. And I sit down. We had a conversation about how two 16-year-old kids wound up at this big business conference, or 16 and 18-year-old kid. And they said, well, we're students. I think it was Malala or someplace like that. It wasn't a very big school. And they said, we had the opportunity to come. It was offered to several kids, but we're the two that came.
Right.
And they started talking to me. They didn't understand lobbying. And, well, when the other people came and met these kids, they were so impressed. We spent most of our time talking to them about how the system works. And I was like, man, what an educational learning opportunity for kids to be motivated and to be in that conference. I was really impressed, and I thought, wow, we need to get more kids involved in government at that level so they understand what's going on. So it was a, I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
But I had to leave early because I'd scheduled some things back down here the next day. I didn't realize that evening dinner was there, and I didn't get the information in time. So that's what I did for those two conferences.
I'll share one comment that you'll appreciate about the dinner. I was sitting between a representative of one of the Portland districts and a staff member from OBI, which is the new that's combined AOI, or anyhow, it's a new, it's the combined entity that represents manufacturers and retailers, and they had a very lively discussion, opposite viewpoints on the cap and trade. So,
controversial.
At our dinner table, although it was friendly, but there were certainly strong viewpoints, differing viewpoints. So, we'll see.
So, I mentioned something else that happened yesterday afternoon. I have to drive by the port because I was just curious. There was close to a dozen day rigs in 100 to 120-foot class there. There was three truck cranes loading equipment on the boats. Two were changing engines out. There was boats loading gear, and every one of those boats had people on them working on the port fill. Now, I know that some people in... I just don't think people in the valley understand what's going on right here in this fish port. If you get a chance, drive down and look at what's there. Two tuna boats from the South Pacific changing engines, I think. Or at least they're tied up next to each other. And then that's only a small part of our fleet that's
right
there. And there's a lot of work going on. So I'm not making any comment except for I was a little shocked how many big truck cranes were there working yesterday.
The ports are a big part of our economic activity.
This is their peak time of the year. They're getting ready to go back to Alaska. They'll leave here. Most of them will leave here in the early January, so everybody's rushing to get gear on board and get grouped up to go. So, okay, anything else?
Not for me. You said constituent input.
Well, constituent input.
Like, nobody's coming forward.
Don't poke Arno.
He's not a constituent. He's staff.
Let him sleep.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, that's, no. Arno works hard. We'll
yes,
give
he
him
does.
We'll give him a rest.
The next meeting is Wednesday, December. Wow, December 13th.
Yeah.
Right. And it's here at this meeting room at 9:30. Mm-hmm. That meeting adjourned.